football on off the ball.
To start with my brother from another mother, Patrick Kluivert, you had Edgar David, you had Frank Rijkaard, you had, and if I need to name one, Frank Rijkaard was of course the man.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Inside the Odds with NoviBet. Miss out on the final bet builder leg? Get up to a €10 free bet back every day on football's biggest tournament this summer if your bet builder loses. NoviBet, more power to you.
18 plus, play responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
All right, welcome along. Inside the Odds, it's our regular World Cup preview show on Off the Ball in association with NoviBet. We're going to be here with you periodically throughout the World Cup to chat through the upcoming games of the next few days. It all starts tomorrow evening, Mexico versus South Africa. All very exciting. Graveyard shift then for the next one, Friday morning, Czechia versus South Korea. It could have been us, guys. 3 a.m. on Friday morning. Like, there is a part of me that's like, God, that would have been a hard one to get excited for.
No.
I would have stopped.
We would have went out on Thursday night and we would have been out until the early hours of Friday.
3 a.m.
We're on a rollover into the breakfast shift.
I know. I'm just trying to, like, God. Like, you know, we have to have some sort of light at the end of the tunnel here. I won't be watching Czechia and South Korea, and none of the rest of the world will be either. So they wouldn't have watched those either.
You say that now. I might be watching it.
You think so?
You watch everything.
I don't know. I did watch. I did make, like, my Qatar was probably the best World Cup ever for watching games.
Yeah.
At European time zones, but I don't know. This one will be a struggle, I think.
Yeah, bring it to Saudi Arabia. Maybe that'll suit us.
Well,
look, it can't be, you know, there's problems wherever we go, it appears. Okay, Friday evening then, Canada versus Bosnia and Herzegovina. 2 a.m. then for, that's the, I think that's 9 o'clock or 8 o'clock, and then it's nothing until 2 a.m. for USA Paraguay. So it's a very slow start, but it all gets going properly on Saturday. Unfortunately, the first game that's on at 8 o'clock, which is prime time for us, Qatar versus Switzerland. It picks up from there, though. 11 p.m., Brazil versus Morocco. Scotland versus Haiti, or Haiti, as we would call them, 2 a.m. And then Australia versus Turkey, 5 a.m.
Australia versus Turkey or Turkiya?
I'm sticking with Turkey,
yeah,
but
we're sticking with Haiti as well.
Absolutely, yeah. Australia versus Turkey is an interesting game. 5 o'clock in the morning is an interesting start time. Like, how late is that in America or wherever the game's been played?
It must be in the West Coast.
Even if it's the West Coast, it's still 9 o'clock.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. It's fairly late, like, you know. So anyway, that's 5 o'clock. Then Sunday we've Germany versus Curacao. 6 p.m., leave me alone with the pronunciation. Netherlands versus Japan is a game a lot of people are looking forward to at 9 p.m. And Ivory Coast versus Ecuador at 11, followed by Sweden versus Tunisia at 3 a.m. You could settle in on Sunday.
Yeah.
You could settle in on Sunday and watch a lot of football if you wanted to, because none of those games are bad. So anyway, that covers off the first 4 days or so. Anyway, we've gone with Brazil versus Morocco as our game of the first few days, but now we better have a big game each day, so you could also go with Mexico versus South Africa, Canada, Bosnia, or Germany, Curacao, and now we better offering up to a €10 free bet if your bet builder loses on the biggest game of each day of the World Cup. So we might just jump into that bet builder then that we've made for Brazil and Morocco. I think David kind of disagrees with that. I've gone for it to be a full-time result being a draw, both teams to score, yes, and Bruno Guimarães to pick up a card of any colour. Obviously, yellow is the one I'm suggesting. That's a 14-1 bet. I think one of the Brazilian midfielders, Bruno or Casemiro, are a guaranteed yellow card in every game this year, so I've just gone for Bruno in this one. And I just don't fancy Brazil. Maybe later in the tournament, I think they could probably play their way into it. I feel like they're very light in midfield. And I look, maybe I'm going off Morocco 4 years ago, but they still have Brahim and they still have Hakimi, and there's good players there. But you kind of think they might be a little bit weaker, David, do you?
Yeah, I just don't see the same kind of momentum that they would have kind of got from the 2022 World Cup in Qatar, where they kind of grew throughout the tournament under this really...
They had the African nations as well, though. That was only
They aren't the champions, but I think,
who actually are the champions?
But they had that coach Ray Grawi, who was kind of at the forefront of obviously Morocco invests a lot of money into their facilities and their development of players, and they made a real kind of play to get players of Moroccan descent playing from that were born in Europe, let's say, born in other places, and getting them playing for Morocco. I think that some of the squad is a little bit old. Yassine Bono, the keeper, is a little bit old. Still a really good goalkeeper. Ashraf Hakimi's had his injury problems in the last couple of weeks.
That worries me, yeah.
And he is their X-factor player. And he's also a right-back, but he's the best probably right-back in the world.
Katie McCabe style.
Yeah. So I do kind of slightly worry for them a little bit. They've got some good midfielders. And they have Enesiri up front, who's ahead of a striker, who's a big physical lad. The opening game against Brazil, like, if Morocco can do the same thing what they've done in 2022 and kind of get a few results early on and kind of grow into the tournament, then that might be the way, you know, how they kind of progress further into the tournament as we kind of see over the next few weeks. But I just think Brazil will have too much for them.
Yeah, maybe.
Brazil will be backed by a big home support as well, I'd imagine, as well.
So. Yeah. My feeling for it to be a draw was of Brazil kind of easing their way into the tournament, maybe dominating a game, it being 1-1 or 2-2. You know, being a little sloppy at the back. Now, look, I mean, it's going to be Gabriela Marquinhos it's going to be as decent a centre half partnership as you'll get. I'm not as sure on their fullbacks. Are they going to be the 4-2-4 style? Cafu, Roberto Carlos, not really there, with Casemiro minding the house with the two centre backs? Because if that's the case, I would very much worry, but I suppose Ancelotti might have just a little bit more sense than that.
Yeah, I think Ancelotti, from kind of reading and listening to, especially what Tim Vickery's been saying over the last kind of couple of weeks, is that it looks like they will bring an extra man into midfield. That'll probably be Lucas Paquetá. Looks like Danilo will play right back, who's quite experienced. Alexandro might play left back, or they might play... Alexandro's 35, like, you know. If you actually look at the Brazilian defenders, they're all 28 plus, and the two defenders that are in reserve for the two centre backs that are in reserve for Brazil are both playing in Brazilian Serie A. So
yeah.
I would be a little bit worried about their squad depth kind of going.
Marquinhos was a Champions League only player this year as well. Is he going to be able to play
pretty much
7 games or 8 games or whatever it
Gabriel
is over the course of a month?
Pretty much every game in the entire season.
Yeah.
In what was a very long season for Arsenal.
He is built for it though.
Well, he is till he isn't. You don't have to throw it away.
No, fair. Brazil, yeah. Brazil had a bit of a, because those have had an identity crisis for the last couple of years, and the game that really scared Brazil was they lost 4-1 away to Argentina, where Argentina played like a box midfield and basically just kept the ball away from them for an entire game. And now Brazil kind of obviously got Ancelotti in, and they've looked to rectify that over the last couple of months. I think they'll be kind of a bit more compact, a bit more harder to beat, and I think they'll play in the counter-attack a little bit with Vinicius Junior, especially kind of key to that. So I think they'll maybe allow Morocco to have the ball a bit, and Brazil will maybe, you know, in that heat, defend a little bit more. And again, like, because three teams are qualifying from the group, pretty much, you'd imagine three teams to qualify from this group in particular. Yeah. That Brazil won't be, you know, we won't be going gung-ho, let's say, early on. But they do have unbelievable amounts of quality and talent.
They do, and they've lots of X factors, and they could win any game. That's the thing. I don't think they can win the World Cup, but they could beat anybody. Like, that's a cliche, but I actually think it's a cliche for a reason. I fancy them kind of sneaky, just kind of like hobbling into the World Cup a little bit, maybe, you know, a little bit of ill discipline, maybe. And I can just see this game being a draw and not being a disaster for anybody.
I think
Morocco versus Scotland is going to be a really big game in this group. We'll see. I don't know what, like, Haiti could surprise a few people, but they certainly won't have enough for Brazil, but they might have some questions of the other two.
I think so, yeah. There's some players based in France, you know, are French descent as well. Kind of obviously a diasporic population as well. So they hammered New Zealand 4-0 last week.
Scored some worldies in that game.
England certainly didn't hammer New Zealand 4-0.
No, you know? And I've seen a lot of Scotland fans online saying, oh no, like, have we been kind of drawn a bit of a tough one that you wouldn't expect?
Yeah.
Scotland Morocco was a huge game, but yeah, I don't know, like, the Haiti is a bit of a unknown quantity.
It is unknown, yeah.
But they will be backed by quite a large Haitian population in the US as well. So that'll be interesting to see.
We got we talked about in the quiz last week, actually, about the fact that Scotland have been in 9 World Cups and never made it out of the group stages, which is like, just again, you actually say the number, it is remarkable. Like, there have been World Cups in there, including Italia 90, 94 they weren't at, 98 I think was a 32 team group, but 1990, 86 anyway, 3 teams were qualifying from most groups and they still didn't do it. And in 90 what caught them was a completely unknown quantity, much like Haiti and Costa Rica, who ended up getting to the quarterfinals, but at the time they beat Scotland, nobody knew anything about them. They were also in Brazil's group that time.
Yeah.
And that was a massive, like, that was a massive fall for Scotland and, you know, the shame of it. But it turned out Costa Rica were a really decent team.
Yeah.
You know, but obviously people didn't know that at the time.
Yeah, I remember a slight tangent, but Paul Merson, his first book is absolutely brilliant. It's hilarious. But he wrote in that book about he got married on that day that Scotland were playing Costa Rica. And he had a bit of a bet on Scotland and couldn't believe after he got married that Costa Rica had beaten them. So, yeah.
He had a bet, did he?
Yeah, he did, yeah.
It's back. Just on the bet for a minute, I can very much see that game being a draw based off of all the reasons that we've outlined there. Even someone, David, suggesting that Brazil will win, I think. I think it's teed up nicely for Morocco here. The manager they have is the same man who led them to under 20 World Cup there not too long ago. Obviously, Regragui is gone. I think the conditions will suit both these teams, to be fair. That's something that's been talked about quite a lot. Whether it'll actually have too much of an impact remains to be seen.
Yeah.
I think it might affect some teams worse than others. But I actually would fancy Morocco actually to even go on and win this group.
Mm. Wow, that's a big shout. Because there is an assumption that Brazil will, like David kind of pointed out, we point out their flaws for 5 minutes and then we ultimately just have a feeling that there's a lot of quality there and that, you know, with a winning manager and a manager who does play to the strengths of what he has...
Yeah,
that might be perfect for Brazil, and they'll figure something out. But yeah, again, the group, I suppose, who finished top.
I think
really
there's a danger.
Brazil can go further in the tournament. Morocco might finish behind them.
Yeah,
in the
there's a danger here as well in that a lot of teams that finish third will get through, and there is a lot of teams who you would look at who are like the fourth seed of the group that are significantly worse on paper than the team that are third seed in the group. But if that sort of manifests in any way, shape or form within any of the other teams to be like, okay, right, look, once we don't completely capitulate, we will get into the knockouts. And that, I think, might spring a few surprises throughout the groups, where you might look at the group that the Netherlands are in with Japan. I think Sweden are in that group as well. There's a world where that gets a little bit dicey and maybe, you know, the Netherlands might start well, but end up coming second or end up coming third, or they might start poorly and still end up winning the group.
I think Japan might beat them.
There might be a few little, and they were just an example, but there's a couple of groups like that that I think maybe... the team that people might look at and go, okay, they have a good chance of getting into the very deep stages of this tournament, may end up coming second or third in their group. And it won't be the end of the world, but it might just make the groups look a little bit funny and throw out some unique clashes, I suppose, in the round of 32 and the round of 16. And then you're thinking, oh God, maybe we have made a bit of a mistake here. And I think that this is one of those groups, because Brazil and Scotland look, I know it's funny, you look at Brazil and Scotland, but Scotland aren't a bad outfit. And if you catch Brazil on the wrong day, they might be able to get something out of it. And then equally, Morocco could go and hockey Scotland. Do you know that sort of way? Like, there's a weird way.
Scotland were 4-0 up at halftime against Bolivia in a friendly last week. They didn't, without their full team.
Yeah.
And I watched about 20 minutes of that match. I was sort of decided I wasn't going to be watching football, and then found myself watching England and New Zealand and said, this is too boring. So instead of not watching that, or not watching football, I went to watch Scotland and Bolivia. And they were they looked like a team just full of confidence. McTominay is, the level he's at now compared to the player that was at Manchester United, I think it all just comes from confidence and just a full belief in himself, because he always had it in him. He always had big moments at United, and he was a decent player, but he's running the show there, like, you know. He always had a bit of that with Scotland, didn't he? Like, he was always that, he was just big dog at Scotland compared to what he was at United.
I think he was
anyway.
Misprofiled heavily for a long time.
At
Manchester United, but maybe also with Scotland a little bit. Steve Clarke was playing him as a centre-half, and he was still popping up with goals in a back three. But at Man United, he was being played as in this pivot with Fred, where he was the defensive kind of man in there, and he was the number six. And he's not that. He's never been that. He was never going to be that. He's just a big lad, so you think, okay, yeah, we'll stick him in there in the hole and he'll clean up.
Yeah.
But
he's not overly technical, let's say. No. Like, but he's technical enough that he plays maybe as a number eight, but he's really, his best position is like a number 10 getting into the box.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The goal against Denmark.
Oh my
god. It's one of the best goals I think I've ever seen. Yeah, like the height he gets off the ground, the unbelievable physicality and like just
athleticism.
The athleticism is just out of this world, and he scored like that goal will just go down in history. But if Scotland are going to go and have a good tournament, you're going to need him running into the box scoring goals. He's probably going to get 3 or 4 goals to get Scotland out of this group, maybe. And I think goal difference will come down a lot of it as well, because teams might beat Haiti by a few goals. You never know, but let's see what happens there. But and Scotland, I would worry for them defensively. If you've got Anthony Ralston and Grant Hanley still in your squad at this stage, I'd very much worry for them. They're goalkeepers. None of them are any good. Angus Gunn, not great. Liam Kelly, okay. Craig Gordon, 43. Like, I will have serious question marks over Scotland, especially defensively. Like, they've obviously lost Billy Gilmore, so they've lost someone who can really keep the ball, a wee technician in midfield. They've replaced him with Tyler Fletcher, who's only played 2 senior games before this.
I don't think he'll feature too heavy.
You
look at like Lewis Ferguson, and there's a lot of
Kenny McLean.
There's a lot of very decent players. Without anybody, like they'll rely a lot on McTominay and the X factor that McGinn brings you, and Andy Robertson, if he still has it in him, obviously will have a huge part to play. Mm-hmm. But I think after that, it's almost like that they're. I think from midfield up, as opposed to including and in, certainly not in the centre of defence and the goalkeeper. But outside of that, I think what they have is a very high floor.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. I don't think they're missing a lot of. Oh, good pros, you know what I mean? And we blend an international team together that has that kind of like manic support of like a load of lunatic. Like Scotland took over the Euros a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
It was a disaster for them. From what I saw in that Bolivia game, there's a lot of them over in America at the moment as well, you know? So I do feel like that there'll be a kind of an element of a bit of buzz around Scotland that I think will help. I'm going to be in Edinburgh on Saturday night, so this is where I'm at.
You're hoping there'll be a buzz.
I'm thinking I might be getting like a McGinn jersey or something. Yeah. I don't know. But.
I think one of the strikers is going to have a World Cup. Do you know, like, you know what I mean? Remember?
Yeah. Shea Adams.
I was just going to say Ender Valencia, the last World Cup. Yeah. They're going to have one of those.
Yeah.
Maybe not if they're going to get out of group, but if they're going to make any kind of impression on this tournament. But I think, to be fair,
I can't believe Ollie McBurney isn't in the squad.
Him or Ross Shewer, wasn't it? It was the call he had to make, and he made the call of Ross Shewer.
There might be room for both. Yeah. Like,
I think Ross Shewer and is Lyndon Dykes in the squad? Yeah,
Dykes and
Ross Shewer and Lyndon Dykes are eerily similar. I think Ross Shewer, I would say, is a good bit better. No, I think
Dykes might be good when you're you don't have the ball.
Yeah, for large periods.
I think Ross Shewer is that as well. So they've basically brought the same player twice. I think Ollie McBurney obviously is something a little bit different. But I'm not sold on Ollie McBurney being a great player, but he's in a good bit of form, and he thinks he's the business too, which goes a long way. Do you know,
that could work in a World Cup. You could see him going on a mad run of form that's never repeated.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
he 24-25 goal involvements in the championship last year. Like, he's just a player playing with confidence as well.
Watch the playoff final. It's like I wasn't gone on Sunderland or where was he?
No. Sheffield United.
Sorry, another rep my team. You know, I didn't think much. I thought he was like someone they spent a lot of money on that was totally not worth it. But I watched a few Hull games in the run-in, obviously, as they were going to try and get in the playoff, trying to hang on in the playoffs as it was, and then obviously in the playoff final as well. And he was like head and shoulders above everybody else. Yeah.
He's in tremendous shape as well.
That's top of the championship. I just don't think Scotland can pick and choose not bringing lads who are like one of the better players in the championship.
It's one of them that there's obviously connection with Lyndon Dykes there, that he's been playing for a lot over the last couple of years. And then outside of that, you're looking at Ross Shewer, who's also at the top of the championship at Southampton. You're looking at Che Adams, who's playing over in the Serie A at the minute and not doing too terribly for himself. And then Lauren Shankland is obviously this guy who's scoring rakes of goals and just signed for Rangers. Less said about that the better, but he scored a lot of goals this season. I think there would be absolute murder if he wasn't brought.
I hope Scotland do well. I was actually born in Scotland, so I always support them as my second team. So I hope I hope they do well. I just really worry for some of their defenders and their goalkeepers.
Yeah, Grant
against
Hanley.
Brazil.
Like, I would have been worried about Grant Hanley 6 years ago.
Yeah,
I'd be worried about Grant Hanley in the championship, let alone going up against Vinny Jr. and Rafinha. And
don't get me wrong, like a good solid pro, like a player played for years, and fair play to him to get into this stage. But
100%.
But the quality there is gonna be very much tested.
We're gonna just go to the reason I just went up to Sunday is we're gonna do another show on Monday and talk about some of the other teams, like England obviously aren't playing, I think, until Friday week, and there's a big old slow start to this World Cup. But looking at some of the teams that are playing, I think Netherlands and Japan is just going to be one of those games that, yeah, I think there's a lot of eyes on. Japan are the Turkey of this tournament, in that everybody thinks they're going to be the dark horse. That they're, I have to say, I don't know too much about them, but I look forward to seeing them, and I'm looking forward to that game. Germany are playing Curacao, which is a nice start for them. Is there any chance, the last time Germany were so unfancy going into a World Cup was 2002, when they like had Carson Yanker up front and they were playing Ireland, and like they were just seen as a joke almost. And of course they made the World Cup final. And because you can never write off the Germans.
Yeah.
You know, but
that's the thing, in the end, the Germans always win.
Is there not most of the time they don't.
That's what Gary Lineker said, so it's just a quote, you know.
Not in wars. Yeah. What about Germany, David? Do you see anything in them that will surprise us? Like,
we were chatting about this last week in the office.
I don't mean on the Eastern Front or anything.
Of course. Yeah.
And I was like, I don't really rate Germany. And then the more I've been thinking about them, I was like, you know, they might have the best coach at this tournament, Julian Nagelsmann. Like,
there's a lot of good coaches at the tournament.
Yeah, if you're the
club coach.
Yeah, true, but I think,
I know, to be fair, they weren't far off it at the Euros.
They weren't.
Very unlucky to go after the eventual winners in Spain.
With the handball, that wasn't the handball that wasn't given, the Cucurella one.
Just feels like we're talking about like Scotland's floor. Like, Germany are going to have, you know, 16 good players on the pitch in every single match. Like, you know, they might not have an X factor at the moment, but like, they'll be fine. Like, they'll be hard to beat.
Yeah, like, for Germany, I think it's like at the both ends of the pitch, like, who's the goalkeeper and who's the striker. It looks like it'll be Manuel Neuer coming back in at 40 years old. Who obviously had a pretty good Champions League.
Good enough for Bayern Munich. Like,
yeah, and he's obviously signed another, I think he signed another year and maybe another 2 years on with Bayern. Yeah. So, yeah, like, how does Nagelsmann incorporate him back into the team without kind of pissing off the other goalkeepers like Oliver Baumann and stuff?
I think all the other goalkeepers are mediocre though, aren't they?
Yeah, well,
it's Oliver Baumann and it's Alexander Nübel.
Yeah.
Baumann's 36 and Nübel's 29.
Yeah, like, I don't know. Like, it's just, you know, you play the whole qualifying campaign and then you get dropped. It's a bit of a sticky one. But then who's going to play up front? Like, Walter Mada had started the campaign up front and looked really good and then went to Newcastle and started really well. And then his form kind of dropped off, especially around, let's say, November, December time. And it looks, I would imagine, Kai Havertz is going to play up front.
Yeah, it looks that way.
Serge Gnabry is obviously not going to be part of the squad for the tournament with an injury. He's actually a big loss. Mm-hmm. So, like, can Florian Wirtz find a bit of form that he didn't have at the, let's say, the last quarter of the season in the Premier League? And Leroy Sané, it looks like he's going to play. He's been playing for Galatasaray for a couple of years now. I don't think he's the answer either. On his day, he's electric. He's an unbelievable player.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd be hanging my hat on Leroy Sané just at the moment.
Fella wouldn't mind throwing on for 15 minutes and he might pop up with something spectacular. Yeah. He's 30 now, Leroy Sané, which seems crazy.
Which isn't that old. You know, the fact that Pascal Gross is in the team, like, no offence to him, but 34 years old.
It's just so versatile. You can do what you want with him.
Yeah, I know. But like,
Musiala, he's your X factor.
Yeah.
That's what I was going to say.
He's your X factor.
You still have Kimmich there. You still have, I don't know, the Rudiger's obviously there, the defenders aren't kind of what they were. Or
Alexander Popovich shined in the Champions League, like, they do have some players there. It's just, and do you know what, it might not be the worst thing in the world for them to be coming in somewhat under the radar here. We heard the term written off an awful lot. I don't know if they're being written off, but I don't know if they're being,
well, you can never write off the Germans, so they obviously aren't.
They obviously aren't. True, that's true. It's impossible. It's an impossibility, but they wouldn't be right up the top of my list of potential winners, but they wouldn't be right down the bottom of it either.
Yeah, I think Havertz is the only option as a forward for them, and that would worry me because Havertz isn't going to be able to play 8 games. And
no. Either,
a couple of unknown quantities. Dennis Undav. Well. They've Dennis Undav, they've Jamie
Lavelling.
Yeah.
All right, that's strikers, Germany. Yeah. What do you think? So let's talk about the hosts a little bit, right? So they're all going to play in the first 2 days. Mexico, South Africa is on tomorrow evening, and then on Friday we've Canada playing Bosnia and USA, Paraguay. I heard an American, pundit saying that their aim is to win the World Cup, and I have to say, I literally like let out what would be described as a guffaw. I was like, I actually like it went, you know, listening to a podcast on my own. It was like, like I'm not being dismissive and ridiculous and European centric here, am I? Like, America have no chance of winning this World Cup, did they?
No, they don't.
Or like, are even getting to like semi-finals or anything?
No, like obviously they appointed Mauricio Pochettino, and it looked like that, you know, they wanted this elite. Well, obviously Argentinian, but he obviously done his most of his best work in Europe, and they wanted his elite coach, and they got him. And it seems like they've kind of, especially the American journalists who cover the team all the time, you know, there was the links with the Brentford job, there was links with other jobs in Europe, and like Pochettino doesn't look like he'll be there after the World Cup. So is this all kind of going by the wayside before the tournament even starts? That's what it feels like to me. They have issues as well in the team. Their goalkeepers, like Matt Turner, was in the Premier League, was pretty awful in the Premier League.
Yeah,
defenders, you know,
in America always had good keepers, was the only thing they had.
Yeah, the defenders, like, you know, they've got obviously Anthony Robbins,
Brad Guzan.
Yeah, Anthony Robbins scored a screamer there last week.
Maybe not him.
And they actually played quite well.
What a goal that was! My God,
they played quite well in that friendly. Unreal, as well. Yeah, yeah. And then they got obviously Christian Pulisic as their main attacking
player. Not good enough
player
for a top Premier League team. Like, let's face it, that's no. What we like. Regardless of Chelsea maybe not being the best suited for him, he's an AC Milan player. Like, and that's in 2026 rather than historically. He's their guy.
But where they're actually strongest is in the middle of midfield. I think Tyler Adams is a really, really good player.
Yeah,
and I think if Liverpool are looking at a midfielder, and obviously they just signed the Bournemouth coach in Areola, I'd be going for Tyler Adams. I think he's a quality player. Weston McKennie, who's a really good player at Juventus, arguably Juventus' best midfielder. Now, that says a lot about Juventus and where they're at, but he's an excellent player and really good. I'd actually have him maybe up for a couple of goals as well in this tournament. And then actually Gio Reyna, who's obviously was this wonder kid in the last tournament, who obviously fell out with a coach, Berhalter, at the time, and he's obviously the son of Claudio Reyna, who played for City and Sunderland. So
that's Greg Berhalter's son there in the midfield as well, Sebastian Berhalter.
Yeah, it is. Mm. Yeah, yeah. So so there are some good players, and Brendan Aaronson, who we all wrote off at the start of the Premier League season, saying, he's no good, but he was actually quite good.
That's who I was going to mention next, actually, because I have to say, as the year went on with Leeds, he stood out more and more all the time, and I think he is a dangerous player, actually. Yeah, so it's like they're not going to be poor by any means. It was more just that I was just so taken aback that there was like a genuine soccer pundit, you know, talking about the winning the tournament. It feels like that's almost a stupid way for him to look at it, because you'll never see it as a success then. Whereas, like,
can we
actually build on something, make a quarter final, be competitive in every game, and launch from there, you know?
And that's it. And I can understand the optimism, right? And it's very American to take that optimism and absolutely run to the hills with it. You look at that squad, you've mentioned a lot of the players. You're looking at that defence, you're looking at Chris Richards, you're looking at Anthony Robinson. These guys are regulars in the Premier League. Tim Ream is still knocking about, which I can't quite believe myself. Sergino Dest was obviously at Barcelona, was at Ajax for a little while. He's not a terrible player. Midfield is very strong. Christian Pulisic, Tyler Adams, as we've already spoken about. Gio Reyna has got a bit. Malik Tillman as well is a very good player. Timothy Weah has been around for quite some time. The forwards too, they're players who have scored in the past. Like Fowler and Balogun is well touted. Ricardo Pepi is someone who has been lighting up the air.
Like 35 million.
Yeah, exactly. And then Hadji Wright too is going to be playing the Premier League next season. It'd be very good for Coventry. So someone they are missing up the top of the pitch is another man who we've written off before, obviously, when we talk about Brendan Aaronson, is Josh Sargent, who had been absolutely lighting up the Championship for the first couple of months for Norwich, and then kind of said, right, well, I'm going, I'm leaving, refusing to play. Didn't get his move, and then did get his move. Ended up signing for Toronto, I think, over obviously in the MLS. He is injured, so he's not going to be there, and that is a bit of a loss for them. They've obviously got Pochettino over them too, who is without doubt the best manager they've had in quite some time. So the optimism is absolutely valid, and the team is as good. And I think on that same podcast, whatever you were listening to, they alluded to the fact that this is the best team that they've had in a long time, maybe ever, as far as players go, as far as manager goes, as far as the fact that the games are going to be in America. There's a lot of things in their favour, but I think they're probably overcooking it a little bit. I don't think they'll be making too much of a stamp, but they're going to have capabilities of causing some form of an upset if things can click, but whether they click or not is another thing.
Can I say something that's interesting about the American soccer team? Men's soccer team only, actually.
USMNT.
Mm. Yeah. They are... It's very interesting watching America as an underdog.
Yeah.
You know, so even taking the politics out of it, and we don't have to, because even politically, they're an interesting kind of... you know, a contrast to a lot of the other American sports and so on. But even taking the politics out of it, America are like big dogs, bad guys in a sporting sense and in a real life sense, but in a sporting sense. Whereas you watch the American team at a World Cup, I'm always kind of half rooting for them.
Yeah.
Like there's always, like, I remember, who did they beat? I remember watching it in the Harry Lemon. Oh my God, I can't remember now. They beat someone at a World Cup in 2014. Really great game, last minute goal in extra time.
There was the Belgium game and there was the Belgium, Portugal, I think, game. Yeah.
Did they lose it in extra time? Actually,
yeah, maybe. Tim Howard made like 14 saves or something.
Yeah. And but I remember just being like living and dying by that. Like I thought it was brilliant. It was so great to watch, and I just really enjoyed them. And I just find that I wonder, is it going to be the same over there? Because when they come to the World Cup, it's funny, you almost abandon the sort of like natural sort of like shudder when you see the Stars and Stripes and sort of get behind them as a little wee America and their underdog status, you know?
Little old USA, yeah. I thought the exact same, especially in the last World Cup. I thought there's some really good young players and I kind of wanted them to put up to England and get out of that group. It's just going to be really hard to support them in the political climate where it is now.
Yeah.
The only thing is, like, they've got to a semi-final, I think, in
1930.
So,
first World Cup.
Yeah. So if they get to a quarter-final, I think that's a massive success for them.
We've only got time to talk about one more. Obviously, again, we'll be back Monday, talk about some of the other big teams, Argentina, England, France, Spain, that are kind of playing in the second week. But Mexico, their gear is amazing. It's all in one of the Irish shops at the moment. I saw it recently. Anyway, I want all of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't really know anything about them as a football team, I have to be honest. We'll watch them tomorrow night and we'll see. But are they a dark horse for a late run?
Yeah, I would say a dark horse, yeah. Like, they're going to, if they manage to, I think, come in the top two in a group, they'll play all their games in Mexico City. It's about 2,500 metres above sea level, so that's an obvious advantage. Now, interestingly, Mexico haven't played a whole lot of games in Mexico in the last couple of years because, well, one, the Azteca Stadium was being redeveloped, and two, it's worth a lot more money for them to play their games in the US just because of the population and because of TV rights as well. There's some really good players and a really good coach in Javier Aguirre, who's been around the block and done it all before. They've got a striker in Raul Jimenez, but they also have strikers in Julian Quiñones and Santiago Jimenez as well, who obviously went to AC Milan. But the one probably most interesting player is that they have is Gilberto Mora, who's the youngest player at the tournament. He's 17, plays at Tijuana in Mexico, and they're kind of calling him like the Mexican Pedri. Now, that's obviously very high praise, but he's wanted by Real Madrid, Barcelona, all the top clubs in Europe. Looks like he's going to stay in Mexico for a little bit longer. But he is going to be a really interesting player. Whether he starts or not maybe remains to be seen, but they have lots of good players. Liga MX, which is the domestic league in Mexico, it's actually watched by more people in the US than it is in Mexico, just, again, population and the diaspora aspect to it. But he'd be a really interesting player, and that's a player I'd definitely be watching in this World Cup.
There you go, that's actually a lovely nugget to kind of take. I've already forgotten his name, so I'll listen back to this.
Yeah, Gilberto Mora.
Nice.
Yeah.
Do you have predictions? Who do you think is going to win the thing out?
I don't, you see, the teams I think are best suited to winning it are France and Spain, but I just feel like something will happen.
Yeah.
Like, I can't see Spain winning back-to-back tournaments. I don't think this is the team of 10 and 12.
And 8.
And 8, yeah. Yeah, sorry, the three tournaments in a row. But, like, I don't know, like, there's too many injuries for Spain, I think.
Did you do your bracketology?
No, I haven't done it, actually, okay. Yeah. Maybe I'll do that now, actually.
Yeah.
Need a little break. I've been on air for 7 hours.
Yeah. I did mine.
Who did you have in your, let's say, your final?
I think I ended up having France and Spain.
Right.
I ended up having France and Spain.
Fairly sure that
and then I
happen.
Finished it and I was like, that's ridiculous. What are you doing?
Yeah.
I actually think Portugal are going to win it.
No.
I think football works in funny ways sometimes, and I think
so we have a Messi World Cup win and then we have a Ronaldo World Cup win.
Portugal-Argentina quarter final that when the draw was
made, I don't
made,
think that's going to happen.
I would be so convinced that's not going to happen.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. On the 11th of July, I doubt it's going to happen.
Argentina are too old, are they?
Yes, I wouldn't write them off.
Some of their players though that aren't old are a good bit better now, or a bit more experienced anyway than they were. Like, Alvarez is a much bigger player now than he was 4 years
Enzo
ago.
Enzo Fernandez.
I'd say Enzo Fernandez is a...
I don't know if he's better, though, but he's more notable.
I think he'll do better.
I can't understand Nicolas Otamendi, 38 years old.
Just very briefly on Argentina, like, I would have been like, no way they're going to win this. Too many injuries, too old, no one retains the World Cup. You do have to get along with each other for a very, very long time. We see that with Uruguay, Marcelo Bielsa, the players and the coaching staff don't seem to get along. And I just think of that Argentinian saying, you know, one asado's worth more than 20 video calls. So they all love each other. They all really get along with each other. I think it's the same with the Brazilian team. That's why I'm swinging back more towards Brazil and Argentina. And in saying all that, I think Spain win the World Cup.
Okay. Yeah. It's a non-European World Cup, though, where Europeans don't usually win.
Yeah.
So just to kind of keep that in mind. All right. Okay, good stuff. I'm going to go for France. I just think, whatever. They've been in the last two World Cup finals.
I don't trust Deschamps. I know he's won the World Cup before.
They'll be a boring winner, I think. Yeah. But they could do it. All right. That's Inside the Odds, our World Cup preview show on Off the Ball in association with NoviBet. We will be back with you, I believe it's Monday, certainly early next week anyway, for another show.
Inside the Odds with NoviBet. Miss out on the final bet builder leg? Get up to a €10 free bet back every day on football's biggest tournament this summer if your bet builder loses. NoviBet. More power to you.
18 plus. Play responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.